Chapter 20. Probably a spy. I cried for days. I was in a pit so deep and dark that nothing and nobody could reach me. I thought I would die from grief. I cried from desolation at the shattering of my hopes and dreams. I cried from anger. How could the British government be so stupid, so heartless? I cried from fear and worry. What would happen to my parents now? And I cried from sheer aching homesickness. I felt as an actual physical pain, the space between me and my parents growing wider and wider. And I was terrified that eventually they would be so far away that I wouldn't be able to reach them anymore. In the end, it was my anger at the British government that spurred me to stop crying and take action. I wrote to the Prime Minister, Neville Chamberlain, to explain my parents' situation and tell him exactly why his policy was so stupid. Molly corrected my grammar and I posted the letter. Once I'd done that, my natural optimism started to return. Perhaps the government would see sense and realise the obvious truth that German Jews were not on Hitler's side. Even if they didn't change their policy, perhaps Mr. Chamberlain would make an exception for my parents once he'd read my letter. Or if that didn't happen, perhaps my parents would somehow manage to escape and come to England. These few glimmers of hope were enough to give me the strength I needed to smile and put on a brave face when the autumn term started and I walked to the village school with Molly and Frank for the first time. We called for some of their friends at the cottages we passed, and we met others walking along the way. I'd already met most of them during the summer holidays, and they were all friendly. Walking to school that morning, it felt nice to be part of a group again. Most of the conversation was about the London evacuees that lots of the other children had staying with them. They had arrived last week with their teacher, who was staying with the vicar and his wife. The evacuees were going to have the village hall for their school, but it wouldn't be ready until tomorrow, so they had an extra day's holiday. Lucky things, said Nancy, who hated school. It's not going to be much of a holiday for our one, said Dorothy. Mum's got her cleaning and polishing all day. I'd rather be at school. Ours just cries for his mummy, says Margaret. And he wets the bed every night, poor little thing. He's only three. I tried reading him a story to cheer him up, but he snatched the book out of my hand and threw it on the floor. Since it was the start of the school year, the smallest children were starting for the very first time, and some of them were clinging to their mothers and weeping at the school gate. In Germany, there was a tradition that children were given a big paper cone filled with sweets to take to school on their first day, but that didn't seem to happen here, which was a shame. A cone full of sweets might have cheered them up. Everybody milled about in the playground, chatting or playing games, until a teacher walked out of the building, ringing a bell that she held in her hand. The heaving mass formed itself into four straggly lines. "Just stand with me for the moment," said Molly. "I expect you'll be in my class anyway." She pointed out her teacher, Miss Marshall, who was also the headmistress. She was a tall, serious-looking woman with round glasses. Her cropped, wavy hair was a faded brown, sprinkled with grey. "Is she nice?" I whispered. "She's nice if you work hard." I studied Miss Marshall's face as we waited in line. Her eyes roamed over all the classes until they lit on a little girl in the youngest class who was trying to contain her sobs by stuffing her fist into her mouth. Miss Marshall went and knelt beside her, and her serious expression turned into the loveliest smile. "I will work hard," I vowed to myself. "I will work hard and impress Miss Marshall." But to my great disappointment, I wasn't in Miss Marshall's class. As the younger children filed into the building, Miss Marshall's eyes came to rest on me. She walked over. "Welcome, Anna," she said, with that kind smile again. "We are very pleased to have you here." "Thank you, Miss Marshall." "Now, I've had a talk with Mrs. Dean," she said to my surprise. Auntie Rose hadn't mentioned this. "She says your English is coming on remarkably well. I was going to suggest that you worked with the upper infants at first, but given how quickly Mrs. Dean says you're progressing, I'm going to put you with the lower juniors." She must have seen the disappointment in my face because she said, "Don't worry, Anna. It's only while your English catches up with the others of your age. I have a feeling you'll be in the top class in no time at all." The school was in an old building. The classrooms had high ceilings and windows right at the top of the walls, too high to see out of. My teacher was called Miss Ambrose. She had droopy hair and wore droopy clothes, and she taught our lessons in a droopy way, as though she was too tired or uninterested to show any enthusiasm. Several of the children were chatting and messing about, and she either didn't notice or didn't care. I wished I was in Miss Marshall's class. I made up my mind that I would improve my English very quickly. The children in the lower juniors were very interested in me. At morning break, when we were all given a little bottle of tepid milk to drink in the playground, they crowded round me, asking questions. "How old are you? Aren't you too old for our class? Margaret says you're German. Are you? Why did you come to England? I thought the Germans hated the English. Say something German." That was a very popular suggestion. Several of the others begged me to say something in German. When I obliged and told them my name and where I came from, they were enthralled. "It sounds so funny. What does it mean? Say it again. Say some more German. Teach us to count to 10. So I taught them the German numbers up to 10, which they found hilarious. "Aren't you going to drink your milk?" asked a boy called Alfie, who had said nothing up to this point. The bottle was warm from sitting in the classroom all morning, and the milk had a thick layer of cream on the top. I wasn't keen on milk at the best of times, and creamy, lukewarm milk was the worst. I handed it gratefully to Alfie, who took it with delight. "Did you ever see Hitler?" asked Janet. I shook my head. "Hitler's crazy," said Stanley. "My mum says he's a madman, and he won't stop till he's conquered the world." "Well, he won't conquer the world, will he?" said Barbara, "because we're going to smash him to pieces." "Sydney's really good at Hitler," said Janet. "Do Hitler, Sydney." Excited faces turned to Sydney. "Oh, yes, do old Hitler, Sid. Go on, Sydney, show her your Hitler." Sydney spat on his hand and slicked down the front of his hair. Then he put one finger under his nose for a moustache and started goose-stepping around the playground, screaming and ranting in a stream of nonsense words. The other children were laughing and egging him on, but my stomach was squirming and I found myself darting frightened glances around the playground. "Don't be ridiculous," I told myself. "It's all right to mock Hitler here. Nobody will mind." A crowd had gathered round Sydney. I was filled with envy as I looked at their laughing faces. How wonderful it would be to see Hitler as a figure of fun. "What's wrong with you, German girl?" My stomach clenched. There was an edge to the question. I looked to see who'd spoken. "Don't you like people making fun of Hitler? Are you on his side then?" It was a short, stocky boy from Molly's class. He had a freckled face and curly brown hair. He took a step towards me. "My dad says the only good German is a dead German," he said. I felt sick. "Shut up, Billy," said Molly. "You know nothing." "I know my dad's out in France fighting the Germans. So what have you got one of them living in your house for? She's probably a spy." Nancy gave a scornful laugh. "A spy? Don't be daft. She's 12. "Exactly. No one would ever suspect her. I bet she's been sent over specially by Hitler." "I hate Hitler," I said. "Well, you would say that, wouldn't you?" The bell rang for the end of break, and everyone filed back into the building. I walked inside with the others, but I felt as though I was 6 years old again, in the playground of my school in Germany. One day back then, I'd been playing with my friends when an older girl strode over and smacked me hard on the side of my face. "Dirty Jew," she hissed. And while I was standing there in shock, she leaned forward and spat in my eye. "My father told me to do that," she said, and walked away. I was too shocked to cry. Ingrid and Ursula comforted me while I got out my handkerchief and wiped my face. But Irmgard had moved back a few paces. She was staring at me. "You're not really Jewish, are you?" she said. "You never said you were a Jew." Suddenly, I felt frightened. "No," I said, "I'm not Jewish." I felt terrible as soon as I'd said it, and completely confused. Why was it bad to be Jewish? I'd asked my parents the same question that evening when I'd told them what had happened. "Hitler is poisoning people's minds at the moment," said Mama, sitting me on her lap and kissing my cheek. "Many people are very poor and they want someone to blame. And Hitler's telling them the reason they're poor is because of the Jews. It's all lies, but some people are willing to believe it." "It won't last," Papa had said. "People will realise Hitler's a madman and they'll turn against him. Things will soon be back to normal." "But what about that horrible girl?" I'd said. Mama held me tight. "I'll speak to your teacher tomorrow. She'll make sure it doesn't happen again." Now, in England, as I sat back down at my desk with the 8-year-olds, I felt cold with fear. Were Billy's comments just the beginning? Could what happened in Germany happen here too?